going to continue on my mission of readdressing Bible stories that we think we know them and coming at it from maybe, for some folks, a new perspective. This one we know really, really well. It's a little bit longer reading, so I'm just going to do one reading. I won't have the second reading here. This comes from Luke chapter 5, verses 11 through 32 from the New Revised Standard Version, updated edition. I think you'll quickly realize what story this is. Then Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the wealth that will belong to me. So he divided his assets between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant region. And there he squandered his wealth in dissolute living. But when he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that region. And he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that region who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up, go to my father, I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against you and against heaven. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Do treat me like one of your hired hands. So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran. He put his arms around him and he kissed him. Then his son said to him, Father, I have sinned against you in heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly, bring out a robe to the best and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet and get the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost, but he's found. And they began to celebrate. Now, his elder son was in the field. And as he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the slaves and he asked, what was going on? He replied, your brother has come and your father has killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound. Then he became angry, refused to go in. So his father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, listen, for all these years, I have been working like a slave for you. And I've never disobeyed your command. Yet, you've never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who's devoured your assets with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him. Then the father said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found. Maybe add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words.
Oh. I come to you broken. I come to you unchanged. I come to you wondering if I'll feel whole again. Oh, I come to you not knowing what's left for me to do. I come to you broken. I come to you. I come to you praying. That you'll reach out your hand. I come to you hoping that you might understand. I come to you looking to chase away these blues. I come to you praying. I come to you. I come to you healing. Ready to move on. I come to you knowing there will be another storm. I come to you believing in love that's true. I come to you. I come to you.
You may have been able to tell by the excitement with which I read those texts. This is one of my favorite stories. I love this story. I come back to it over and over again. It always fascinates me, and I feel like I always find a new wrinkle the next time I read it.
You thought you were on the stage.
That's right. You're lucky I didn't get, like, in full costume for this one. We switch out hats and stuff. I really do like that story a lot. My message today is entitled The Brother Outside the Party. So there are some Bible stories that people think they, you know, already understand. This, of course, is one of them, the prodigal son. Traditionally, the story gets preached this way. Bad kid sins, hits rock bottom, repents, gets forgiven, right? That's what we grew up here. And sure, at its most basic reading, that is here. It's in the story. But if that's all the story is about, well, then honestly, Jesus spends an awful lot of time talking about the wrong son. Because when you really pay attention to this story, the younger brother is only part of the problem. The older brother, well, that's where Jesus starts turning the knife just a little bit as he tells the story. And honestly, it makes sense because Jesus is telling this story to, well, he's telling this story to religious people who are angry about who gets included. And you see, that matters. See, Luke tells us, at the beginning of the chapter, that the Pharisees and scribes, well, they're grumbling. And they're grumbling because Jesus is eating with sinners. the translation from them there is sort of, those people, they don't deserve to be treated like they belong. So, Jesus, in response, tells three stories in a row. The lost sheep, the lost coin, and then this story. I sometimes call it the lost brothers. And this one lands the hardest, I think, because it exposes something that religion still struggles with even today. See, some people love grace right up until somebody they dislike receives it too. You probably know folks like that. If not, you've probably seen them on TV, possibly on the news, even or at least on stage in a live broadcast on TV. Now, traditionally, we picture the younger son as this horrible, rebellious little monster. But culturally, honestly, the inheritance request that he made was not necessarily that outrageous. It wasn't an insult that we usually make it out to be often. Disrespectful? Well, maybe. Reckless? Definitely reckless. But honestly, at that time, not unheard of. The younger son wants freedom, wants independence, wants a life that is disconnected from the expectations of home. And honestly, I mean, you got to admit that feels pretty human for most of us. And then he blows through all the money. And eventually he ends up feeding pigs, starving, exhausted, isolated. Which, for Jesus' Jewish audience that would have been there, is basically the lowest social and religious point that they can even imagine. And that's where most sermons say, then he repented. But you know what? The text doesn't actually say that. No. But it says, then he was hungry. See, that changes things because sometimes people return home transformed. And sometimes they return home just tired. Sometimes people come back because they have a deep spiritual awakening. And sometimes life just knocked the wind out of them. And honestly, most folks have been both at one point or another. But then Jesus says something that's a little bit shocking. While the younger son is still far away, the father sees him and runs to him. Runs. And that little point matters more than most modern readers typically will even realize. You see, patriarchs just didn't run in that culture. It didn't happen. Running meant that you had to lift your robes up, exposing your legs publicly, which basically was understood to be humiliating yourself socially. So the father abandons dignity, abandons status, abandons really respectability. The question is then, why? Well, I would say it was to close the distance before shame could close the distance. Because in that culture, the community could have gotten there first, publicly rejected or humiliated the son before reconciliation ever happened with the father. But because he ran, the father gets there first. Love outruns condemnation. And friends, I got to say, right there might be the summation of all of the Gospels. Love outruns condemnation. Okay. Turn to somebody near you and answer this question. Have you ever experienced a moment when someone offered you kindness and you felt like you probably didn't even deserve it? Take about a minute each. Someone offered you kindness and you felt like maybe you didn't even deserve it. You haven't switched turns yet. It's about time to do that. Let's get it.
No, I made this mistake, and I'm not sorry about it.
Wait,
how should you?
What's
wrong with you?
I'll
put
the mic back in
there. We're in the black room. I'm just kidding.
So I think one of the reasons that the story still hits so hard for most of us is that most of us understand the younger brother at least a little bit. We know what it's like to make mistakes, to waste things, to disappoint people, to lose ourselves for a little bit. But here's where Jesus starts confronting the religious crowd that's listening to him. See, the older brother comes home from the fields, hears the music, and gets furious. Not confused, not concerned, angry. And if we are to be honest, a lot of us understand that second brother too. Because the older brother is the part that keeps score. I follow the rules. I worked hard. I stayed faithful. I did everything right. And now this reckless fool gets a party. You see, the older brother believes that belonging should be earned. Belonging should be earned. And religion often has agreed with them on that. That is why churches sometimes become places where people are welcomed conditionally. You can come in if you look right, believe right, vote right, love right, use the right language, hide the right parts of who you really are. And Jesus keeps telling stories that blow those kinds of systems completely apart. Because Jesus is deeply uninterested in merit-based belonging. The older brother cannot stand grace being given freely because he has built his whole identity around deserving it. And I honestly think that is one of the reasons why progressive Christianity matters so much right now, because so much of modern religion still operates like the older brother. Too many churches want compassion for themselves, and patience for themselves, understanding for themselves, but for people they dislike, people they fear, people they think are irresponsible or strange or threatening, well, suddenly they become what I would call theologians of consequence. In other words, if they made their bed, now let them sleep in it. Which brings us back to the older brother, standing outside of the party, furious, because grace is being wasted on the wrong person. But the father, The Father goes out to him too. And that matters in this story. The Father goes to him, just like he went to the younger brother. The Father loves both brothers. Even the resentful one, even the bitter one, even the one who cannot celebrate somebody else being welcomed home. The Father says, all that is mine is yours. We had to celebrate, had to. Because somebody who was lost has been found. Somebody isolated has come home. Somebody starving has been welcomed back to the table. And apparently that matters more than keeping score. Okay. Let's do this again. Turn to somebody new, if you can, if it's possible, talk about this. Where do you see modern versions of that older brother mindset in religion or society today? Older brother mindset in religion or society today. Take about a minute each again. Please go. I'm trying to switch to the second person. Another minute ago. All right, let's get back to it. So, you know, I think that one of the reasons that this story survives so well is because Jesus leaves the ending unresolved. Well, we never find out. We never do. We never find out if the older brother ever goes inside. And honestly, that's sort of brilliant storytelling. Because now the listener has to answer the question, will you come to the table if people you dislike are already sitting there? Will you participate in community if grace is not distributed according to your rules? Will you celebrate healing that happens outside of whatever your categories of making a person deserving of them is? Because the scandal of this story is not forgiveness. The scandal is inclusion. The scandal is that the Father throws a feast before the Son can prove anything. He just throws it anyway. No probationary period, no theological exam, no earning his way back. Just a big embrace. And you know what? That kind of grace offends systems that are built on scarcity. Because scarcity says there is not enough belonging to go around. But the Father acts like love multiplies instead of diminishes when you share. And my friends, that is still today a radical thought.
Would you say that?
The Father believes that love, instead of diminishes when you share it, expands. And that is a radical thought. We always think that we live in this scarcity society where everything is unlimited and you can't share it that broadly and that fully. We live in a culture that's addicted to punishment. Public shaming, humiliation, exile, cancellation, disposable people. Everybody gets reduced in some way to their worst moment at some point. And Jesus tells a story where the worst moment is not the end of the story. Not because accountability doesn't matter, it does. The youngest son calls harm. The older brother, though, calls harm too. But Jesus seems to be more interested in reconciliation than in punishment. More interested in restoration than exclusion. More interested in healing relationships than protecting some kind of respectability. And maybe that's what makes this story so difficult. Because if we're honest, because of our society, most of us prefer fairness to grace. We do. Grace feels sort of dangerous. Grace feels insufficient. Grace feels unfair, let's face it. But Jesus keeps describing love as something that's outrageously extravagant. A shepherd leaving 99 sheep. A woman literally just turning her house upside down to find one coin. A father sprinting down the road towards a child who's not even finished his apology yet. And you know, maybe that's the invitation of this story. And maybe the invitation of the story isn't simply come home. Maybe it's also come inside. Come inside. Come inside the celebration. Come inside the compassion. Come inside the community where people are more than their failures. Because the tragedy of the older brother is not that he was wrong about responsibility. It's that resentment kept him from joy. Let me say that again. The tragedy of the older brother is not that he was wrong about responsibility. It is that resentment kept him from joy. And there are still people standing outside of parties today, outside of churches, outside of communities, outside of belonging. Some there because shame told them that they could never come back. Others because bitterness told them they were better than everyone else. And the Father keeps walking towards them both. Still inviting. Still loving. Still refusing to let scarcity have the final word. Because apparently, love is big enough for both brothers. And maybe, just maybe, that is the hardest thing that Jesus has ever said. Amen. Doug, let me give some other song, please.
I think I've done this one for you all recently, but let's have my therapist has gone missing. He's not responding to my texts. I know someday I will meet him. I swear I ain't there yet. There's still things that I ain't figured out. Like how we can get the curveball. And what my life's about. My family won't come visit. work issues, so I'm told. I've been the one who made the effort. But now I'm getting old. But they come to my funeral. I guess they might. In my dreams, I don't have one. Simply out of spite. And I roll with so many punches. That bitterness could never be my style. Things are bound to get better after a while. I'm not a smart man, you can truly say. When something isn't right, I'll go ahead, I'll do it anyway. Make the wrong decision whenever I can. My ideals are strung about this terrible, dusty plan. And I'm tired of living in the margins. I'm tired of living in the wild. I hope to find my way home after a while. Feels like I'm starting over again, again and again. I need to find a purpose. I need to find a friend. I should dial a number and hope that I get through. Tell her that I'm sorry and how much better I'm gonna do. Well, I'm low, so tired of being alone. So I'll give her a call as soon as I find my phone. And if I didn't know, I'd swim to the other. Just for a chance to see her smile. Again, and I'm see her after a while, and things are bound to get better after a while.
Thank you, Doug. We appreciate that very much. Let's take a moment and bow our heads together. We confess that this story is uncomfortable. We would much rather know which brother we are supposed to be. And the truth is, most of us have been both. We've chased things that promised more than they could ever deliver. We spent time lost, distracted, wandering. We stood outside with our arms crossed, keeping score. We celebrated grace when it found us and questioned it when it found someone else. We know how easy it is to divide the world into those who deserve compassion and those who do not. How easy it is to convince ourselves that belonging must be earned. How easy it is to mistake fairness for love. Yet the story refuses to leave us there. It reminds us that life is not a competition for acceptance, that grace is not a limited resource, that there is enough welcome for everyone, enough dignity for everyone, enough belonging for everyone. May we learn to recognize those moments when resentment begins to take root. May we learn to notice when fear of scarcity causes us to shrink our circles, close our doors, or just guard our tables. May we remember that every one of us has depended upon the kindness of others, that every one of us has needed forgiveness, that every one of us has needed someone to see more in us than our worst decisions. In a world that seems incredibly eager to shame, exclude, and discard people, may we become a different kind of people. people who make room, people who build longer tables, people who choose reconciliation over vindication, people who understand that communities are strongest not when everyone is the same, but when everyone belongs. And when we find ourselves standing outside the party, whether because of shame or because of judgment, may we hear again the invitation to come in, to join the celebration, to participate in healing, to trust that love is large enough to hold us all. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. May your words and your actions share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.
It doesn't matter if the mountains fall into the sea, or if the sun no longer shines. It don't matter if all of the work gets done, or if we somehow fall behind. All these things are important. I realize this is true, but they don't really matter. Too much to me, 'cause I just want you to be. It don't matter if my team cuts down the nets, or we get a World Series ring. Though it'd be nice if I won the lottery, we know that money isn't everything. To define what matters is something we all need to do. It's just one thing that mattered that much to me. And that's if I matter to you. Matter is any substance that has mass and takes up space, distinct from spirit and mind. Solid, gas, and liquid are its primary states. It's that easy to define. Some folks spend their lives thinking about these things, and I'm really glad they do. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much to me. I just want to matter to you. Oh, I just want to matter to you. Just want to matter.